Welcome and hello, everyone. I'm Pat.
And I'm Jesse. It's really lovely to have you settling in with us for today's deep dive.
Today, we're going to embark on a really quite profound journey, actually. We're exploring a topic that quietly, but well, powerfully shapes so many of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the lasting impact of our earliest relationships, particularly with our mothers. We're talking about something often called the mother wound.
That's right. And our mission for this deep dive really is to take a whole stack of compelling sources. We've got personal stories people shared online, some really in-depth psychological research, and sort of distill them down.
Yeah.
Find the most important nuggets for you. We want to help you really get what the mother wound means, how it kind of subtly shows up day to day, and crucially, how we can, you know, gently but effectively navigate its influence to foster healing, really, and maybe break those generational patterns that can feel so, so tricky. We'll take our time with it, like unfolding a story, making sure we share the key insights without, you know, just throwing too much information at you all at once.
Okay, so let's start right there. Let's clarify this term. When we talk about the mother wound, what exactly are we referring to? Like, what is it at its core?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a concept that really resonates with so many people, I think. The mother wound, it's not like a formal clinical diagnosis you'd find in a book.
Right.
But it powerfully describes this profound emotional pain.
Yeah.
It basically stems from a child's relationship with their mother. Often it's rooted in feelings like abandonment, maybe deep criticism, or even this unacknowledged guilt that can get passed down through the maternal line, you know, through generations. Sometimes a mother might be physically present, like right there in the room.
Yeah.
But just emotionally unavailable. And that creates this deep disconnect that echoes through her children's lives, often, you know, well into their adulthood.
And it's not always about those really big, dramatic, obvious events, right? It
yeah.
can be much more subtle. What does that look like in, like, everyday life for people?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it manifests in so many nuanced ways. Think about, like, a mother saying, maybe dismissively, "Stop. Don't tell me. I don't want to know how your dad hurt you."
Oof.
Yeah. Or perhaps treating her child almost like a personal therapist, you know, burdening them with adult problems.
Right.
We've seen examples from the sources where a mother constantly criticizes her own body in front of her child. Maybe even says something really hurtful, like, "Having you kids ruined my body."
Wow.
There's also the quiet but pretty devastating act of gaslighting. You know, telling a child, "You're just looking for things to be upset about," when they're actually trying to express real hurt.
Mm-hmm.
These are like small cuts, you know, but they add up over time.
Those are incredibly vivid, yeah.
Yeah.
And relatable, sadly. What other kinds of experiences, maybe even more extreme ones, contribute to this kind of wound?
Well, the sources show a really wide spectrum, and some are truly heartbreaking. It could involve using religion to shame a teenager about their body or, you know, sexuality.
Okay.
Or physical acts like slapping a teen or even pinning an 11-year-old to the floor when what they needed was comfort.
Oh, my gosh.
Sometimes it's a mother telling other family members her child has a mental illness they were never actually diagnosed with. Then there are the more, like, subtle forms of emotional cutoff.
Uh-huh.
Like using the silent treatment so often that a child grows up thinking ignoring people is just, like, normal conflict resolution.
Oh.
Or making a child feel their feelings were fundamentally wrong if they didn't match the mother's emotions.
Mm.
More extreme examples. A mother choosing an abusive partner over the child, like, every single time. Right. Or even leaving a child and a baby alone in a freezing cold parking lot. It can even show up financially paying for some siblings' college but not others, or forcing a child to keep seeing someone who was touching them inappropriately even after the child reported it. It highlights the sheer breadth of experiences that can feed into this wound.
It's truly eye-opening, the range of it.
Yeah.
So, okay, with these very real, sometimes painful examples in mind, how do psychologists start to make sense of this, these profound maternal influences? Like, what frameworks help us understand why these experiences cut so deep?
Yeah, and that's where looking at some of the psychological theories can be really helpful. It gives us perspective. So from a Jungian angle, for example, the mother plays this really critical role in how a child's personality develops, especially for daughters.
Okay.
The mother is seen as the very first template for relationships. We often project this almost archetypal, like, godlike image onto her.
Mm.
Our earliest experiences with her subtly shape what we come to expect in all our relationships, really, for the rest of our lives, unless we actively do what Jung called shadow work.
Shadow work. Okay, that's a fascinating term, but maybe a bit abstract. Can you explain a little more about this shadow and why it's so important here?
Absolutely. Yeah, let's break it down. Think of your shadow as the unconscious part of your personality. It's the stuff that, for whatever reason, you've kind of pushed down or rejected.
Right.
The bits you maybe don't want to admit are part of you.
Mm.
On the flip side, your persona is the version of yourself you show the world, the mask you wear, essentially.
Okay.
Now, here's the interesting bit. A daughter might really identify with her mother's persona, how she acts, what she values, or she might completely reject it. But, and this is key, the mother also has her own shadow, parts of herself she's rejected.
Ah, okay.
And as kids, we're really intuitive. We pick up on these hidden parts. So if we reject our mother's persona, that rejected role, ironically, can slip into our own shadow. Yeah. Leading us to unconsciously act out the very patterns we thought we were avoiding. This can also feed into what's often called mother guilt. Not the mother feeling guilty, but the deep sense of inadequacy we carry if we feel we haven't met our mother's expectations or society's expectations reflected through her.
Right.
It really shows how the you think you are isn't always just naturally you. It's often built up from these incredibly early experiences.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's like we're trying to figure out these inherited bits versus who we really are.
Mm.
So how does this connect to our basic sense of security? You know, how we form bonds with everyone else?
This takes us right into Bowlby's attachment theory. Heard of that?
Yeah.
And the idea of the internal working models.
Likely. Yeah.
So Bowlby suggested that our earliest emotional bonds, usually with our primary caregiver, often the mother, are absolutely critical, not just for comfort, but for survival and emotional development. These bonds form a kind of mental blueprint or like a personal operating system. It guides how we understand ourselves, other people, the world. Ideally, a caregiver provides a secure base,
uh-huh.
that feeling of safety that lets a child explore confidently, and a safe haven, a reliable place to go for comfort when they're distressed. This first relationship becomes the prototype, the model for all future connections.
So if that primary bond gets disrupted or it's just not adequate somehow,
yeah,
the implications could be pretty significant then.
Absolutely. Bowlby's early idea, the maternal deprivation hypothesis, suggested that ongoing disruption could lead to long-term problems intellectually, socially, emotionally. Now, early research sometimes pointed to quite extreme outcomes.
Right.
But later work, like from Michael Rutter, added more nuance. For instance, distinguishing between deprivation, which is losing an attachment you had, and privation, which is failing to form any attachment in the first place.
Okay.
And privation often seems to be more damaging. But it's also really important to remember things like a child's own temperament and the quality of any alternative care they get can make a big difference.
It is not always set in stone.
Exactly. The effects aren't necessarily irreversible, but the core message, it remains incredibly important. Those early relationships are just pivotal in shaping who we become.
That's a powerful foundation.
Yeah.
Okay, so fast forward. What does all this mean for us as adults? How do these early experiences with our mothers actually shape our current relationships, our friendships, our romantic partnerships, and even our core sense of self, like decades later?
Yeah. If we zoom out a bit, connect the dots, these early experiences can have a huge impact on how we relate to others, especially romantically. There was this qualitative study looking at adult children of narcissistic parents.
Okay.
And it found really specific challenges in their current romantic lives. Things like struggles managing their own emotions, patterns in who they choose as partners.
Hmm.
And even the parents still being really intrusive in their adult relationships. It really highlights how those early dynamics set expectations unconsciously about long-term partnership. Sometimes partners even hesitated to get married because of the ongoing issues with the, you know, narcissistic parents.
Wow. That sounds like it could easily spiral into patterns like codependency, which seems to be a word a lot of people are grappling with.
Exactly. Yeah, codependency is this really interesting, often tough dynamic. It's where one person, or maybe both, in a relationship rely on the other for their happiness or sense of worth, often in an unhealthy kind of enmeshed way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often a generational pattern. Like someone might have grown up automatically relying on their mother for constant reassurance about everything, or maybe unconsciously tied their own happiness to how their mother was feeling, sort of absorbing her emotions.
Right.
And then that cycle, that blueprint, just repeats itself almost exactly in their adult romantic relationships.
And what about just our sense of self, our identity? How deep does the mother wound go there?
Oh, the impact here is profound, really deep. The mother wound can sadly lead to this diminished sense of self-worth, just a persistent feeling of inadequacy, like you're never quite good enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's often this overwhelming need for external validation, constantly looking for approval from others because you maybe didn't get that solid foundation early on.
Yeah.
It can also show up as real difficulty trusting people, especially other women, maybe because of past hurts or betrayals. People might also struggle intensely with emotional regulation, either being super reactive to triggers,
okay,
or the opposite, completely suppressing emotions, maybe believing their feelings are just a burden or wrong. It also deeply impacts our ability to set and keep healthy personal boundaries.
How so?
Well, we might have boundaries that are way too flexible, bending over backward because of a deep need to please, or the opposite again, really rigid boundaries, pushing everyone away because of a fear of rejection or intimacy. People might often feel like they're just constantly on the periphery, sort of isolated, or always questioning if their own thoughts and feelings are even valid.
That paints such a challenging picture of how deeply rooted these patterns can become.
Yeah.
And it brings us back to that idea of a cycle, something inherited.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe clarify what generational patterns really means in this context and why spotting them is so important?
Yeah, generational patterns, essentially, they're inherited ways of thinking, core beliefs, emotional reactions, even coping strategies that get passed down through families, sometimes for generations, often without anyone even realizing it.
Right.
It's not really about like blaming family or breaking families apart. It's more about understanding how our childhood experiences and our family sort of operating system shaped our adult lives and relationships.
Okay.
These patterns can influence pretty much everything: our money habits, our spiritual beliefs, how we communicate, the gender roles we unconsciously adopt, even what triggers our fight or flight response.
Oh, wait.
Recognizing them, that is truly the first and probably the most powerful step.
Why is it so powerful?
Because it helped us understand what we're carrying and why we behave certain ways. These patterns often become parts of our identity that we just assume are us, you know, when in fact they were learned, they were inherited.
Yeah. Okay. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
And it definitely paints a challenging picture of how deep these influences run. But like you said, awareness, just seeing it, is the first vital step towards change. So now that we kind of understand these patterns and their impact, how do we actually move from understanding to healing? How do we actively break the cycle for ourselves and maybe for the next generation?
Right. And that's the empowering part, really. The good news is that healing is absolutely definitely possible. And it's so crucial, not just for your own peace, but for reclaiming your personal power and stopping these negative cycles from just repeating.
Okay.
The first most vital step, as you said, is self-awareness. It means making a conscious effort. And yeah, sometimes it's painful to honestly look at your upbringing, identify those inherited patterns, and really understand how they're playing out in your life today. It involves asking yourself some pretty powerful questions like, whose actions, whose beliefs, whose choices am I actually performing here? Did I consciously choose them or did I just inherit them?
Right.
It also means acknowledging the pain. Recognizing that, yeah, your mother probably did the best she could given her background, her culture, her own wounds. But you are not condemned to repeat her patterns.
Okay.
It's ultimately about taking full responsibility for your own life. And that's not about blame, not at all. It's about taking back the controls.
What specific therapeutic approaches or ways of working are particularly helpful for this kind of deep work? It sounds like it goes pretty deep.
It does. And there are several really powerful approaches. Psychotherapy just generally provides that safe space to identify, process, maybe even mourn past hurts or abuse. It offers a way to really understand how these patterns started and how to stop them repeating.
Uh-huh.
A really fascinating approach that's getting a lot of attention is internal family systems, or IFS.
IFS.
Yeah. It's a non-pathologizing therapy. It sees us as being made up of different parts. Maybe you have a critic part or a people pleaser part or a not good enough part. Each part has its own role, its own beliefs, sometimes carries old burdens.
Interesting.
The goal in IFS is to get to know these parts, understand them, and help them release those burdens, unburden them, so that your core compassionate self, with a capital S, can lead your life in healthier, more conscious ways. Healing in IFS doesn't mean triggers vanish entirely.
Right.
But you gain the ability, the capacity to work through them effectively with self-compassion when they do come up.
Are there approaches that focus specifically on the mother-child dynamic itself?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe especially in the early stages, helping new moms break cycles?
Absolutely. Yeah, for instance, there's something called the mother-infant therapy group model. It's often used for things like postpartum depression, and it's a great example of a family-centered approach.
Okay.
It addresses a mother's depressive symptoms, but it does it within the context of her key relationships with her baby, her partner, even her own family she grew up in.
Holistic.
Exactly. The model aims to reduce the depression, yes, but also directly address the mother's own experiences of being parented, reduce her isolation, and strengthen the whole family system. And studies show it works. Mothers in these groups report fewer depressive symptoms. They see their babies as more rewarding. They feel more connected.
That's great.
And they show more positive communication with them. It really highlights this crucial point. Often, we need to treat the relationships, not just the individual symptoms in a vacuum.
That makes sense. So beyond formal therapy, which sounds incredibly valuable, are there things we can do ourselves, like daily personal practices to help navigate these challenges in everyday life?
Yes, definitely. Several practices can make a huge difference day to day. Mindfulness is incredibly powerful. It's simply the practice of being present, being aware of your thoughts, your feelings, your body sensations, without judging them. For mothers specifically, it helps them really tune into their child's needs as they change and grow. And it helps them tolerate intense emotional states, their own and their child's, fostering better emotional regulation and a more secure attachment. Instead of just reacting unconsciously based on old patterns, mindfulness helps you respond thoughtfully, adaptively.
Right.
Setting healthy boundaries is another crucial one, especially vital if there are codependent patterns.
Yeah.
This involves learning to emotionally detach a bit from other people's feelings, focusing on what you can actually control. It's about recognizing it's not just okay, but actually necessary to stand up for yourself sometimes.
That's hard but important.
It really is. And building strong emotional support networks, partners, trusted friends, mentors that provides vital emotional backup. And finally, just basic self-care. Prioritizing your own well-being, whether it's exercise, journaling, time in nature, connecting with supportive people, it builds self-esteem and constantly reminds you that you are fundamentally worthy of love and care.
Wow. It really sounds like true freedom, true liberation comes from having the courage to actually face these deep patterns, look them in the eye, and then consciously choose a different path.
That's exactly it. That's the heart of it. When you consciously do the work to break generational patterns, you build profound self-awareness. You develop real compassion for yourself, and actually often for your family too, and you start forging new core beliefs. Beliefs that fundamentally transform your behavior and all your relationships. This courageous process lets you step away from those unconscious reactions rooted in shame or blame or old pain and move towards this conscious presence, one of patience, genuine curiosity, confidence, and love, like Jung suggested. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it just runs your life on autopilot. True free will emerges when you integrate your shadow, when you understand these hidden parts, and then make decisions based not on those early imprints, but on genuine, empowered choice. It's about recognizing that your mother, like all of us, really did the best she could with what she had, with her own conditioning. And understanding that frees you from needing to blame. And most importantly, it empowers you to build a life that you are truly proud of, a life you're proud to live and maybe proud to pass on.
What an incredibly insightful and I think profoundly meaningful deep dive today. We've really explored some intricate layers of the mother wound, how deeply it can shape us, our lives, our relationships, but also the powerful, hopeful pathways that are available for healing, for self-liberation, really.
Yeah, absolutely. We truly hope this conversation has offered you not just information, but maybe some of those aha moments, or perhaps just a sense of validation for your own experiences, whatever they may be. And maybe just to leave you with a thought for the week, what's one small, maybe gentle step you could take today just to acknowledge an inherited pattern in your own life, or maybe to nurture a part of yourself that feels like it might need some healing?
That's a great question to sit with. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive, everyone. We truly hope it resonated with you and offered some valuable insights.
Yes, and if you found value in our conversation today, we would be so grateful if you'd consider subscribing, perhaps liking this, and maybe sharing this deep dive with someone you think might need to hear it. And please do leave us a comment too. We'd genuinely love to hear your thoughts and be part of this ongoing conversation with you. We look forward to having you back for our next deep dive.
Goodbye for now. And take good care.